Laudato Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines, it's Tuesday, November the 26th. Israel's cabinet meets to discuss a ceasefire deal with Hezbollah. A UN report details that the number of children in armed gangs in Haiti has increased by 70% since 2023. And we speak to Professor Sebastian Brock of Oxford University about the Pope's recent decision to add a 7th century Middle Eastern mystic to the Catholic Church's calendar of saints. In the Vatican, I'm Joseph Tullock. Israeli warplanes hit Beirut's southern suburbs with a wave of airstrikes on Tuesday, just before Israel's cabinet met to discuss a ceasefire deal with members of Hezbollah. A senior Israeli official and the Lebanese foreign minister have said that they are optimistic a deal will be reached, clearing the way for an end to a conflict that has killed thousands of people since Israel's invasion of Lebanon on the 1st of October of this year. Linda Bordoni has more.
Despite the possibility of an imminent diplomatic breakthrough, Israel on Tuesday launched a barrage of airstrikes on Beirut's densely populated southern suburbs it claims host Hezbollah strongholds. The IDF announced that one barrage of strikes had hit 20 targets in the city in just 120 seconds. Tel Aviv had issued its biggest evacuation warning yet, telling civilians to leave 20 locations. Meanwhile, the Iran-backed Hezbollah kept up rocket fire into Israel. Over the past year, more than 3,750 people have been killed in Lebanon and over 1 million have been forced from their homes, many of them since the conflict escalated in September. On the diplomatic front, Israel's security cabinet, under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, is meeting to discuss the ceasefire deal, which a senior Israeli official said was likely to be approved. Speaking to the press, senior Lebanese sources said this would pave the way for a ceasefire declaration by the US and French presidents. And at a conference in Rome, the Lebanese foreign minister expressed hope that a deal could be sealed by Tuesday night. However, there was no indication that a truce in Lebanon would hasten a ceasefire and hostage release deal in devastated Gaza that has been under attack since October the 7th as Israel pushes forward with its intent to annihilate Hamas. Since then, 44,250 Palestinians have been killed in the Gaza Strip and almost 105,000 have been injured. Most of the victims are women and children. I'm Linda Bordoni.
Pope Francis has repeatedly been calling for a ceasefire in Lebanon as well as in Gaza. And just yesterday, the Pope condemned what he called the, quote, arrogance of occupiers in Ukraine and Palestine. Now, the war in the Middle East was also on the agenda of the Regional Episcopal Conference of North Africa, which has echoed the Pope's call for a ceasefire. The plea came as the body which brings together the bishops of Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya and Western Sahara concluded its annual assembly in its ad limina visit to Rome. That was on the 24th of October. Lisa Zengarini has more.
The war in the Middle East and its impact on the small Catholic communities in North Africa were among the several topics discussed last week by the North African bishops, who at the closing of their assembly issued a message calling on their churches to dedicate the upcoming Advent season to praying for peace in the region. In the message, the bishops decried the devastating consequences of the conflict in the Holy Land, which has resulted in countless victims, displaced people, and massive destruction, with the suffering population being deprived of essential needs like food and medical care. The bishops also strongly deplored the ongoing illegal colonization or the annexation of Palestinian territories in the West Bank, which has not been spared by the violence. They stated that in no case can the Bible be used to legitimize the colonization and annexation of a territory that belongs to a people who only aspire to live in justice and peace. Affirming their unwavering commitment to peace against all wars, violence and any act of terrorism, the bishops of North Africa first appealed to the leaders of the countries involved in the conflict. They assured their prayers that the heads of government may have the courage of humility, sincerely listening to each other's suffering and rejecting all hatred, any desire for destruction, spirit of vengeance or domination. They also urge other nations to commit to ensuring a peace agreement instead of supplying weapons to the warring parties. The letter concluded by inviting the Catholic faithful in North Africa to dedicate the Advent season to praying for peace and engaging in acts of reconciliation and solidarity with the victims of the conflict. I am Lisa Zingarini.
And now moving over to the Caribbean, a row has flared up between Haiti and France after French President Emmanuel Macron called Haiti's leaders total morons. James Bliss has more.
The piquant criticism from President Emmanuel Macron originated at the G20 summit in Brazil, with him lambasting the decision of Haiti's transitional presidential council to fire Prime Minister Garry Conille after just 6 months in the job, which is challenging, demanding and dangerous. Macron insisted, "They're total morons. They should never have dismissed him." The political fuse has burned slowly, but it's singed and scorched Haitian pride, politics and national sensibility. Former president of the Transitional Council, Edgar Le Bonfils, has just hit back, accusing Macron of insulting a nation that's living in dark times. He's describing it as blatant interference in Haiti's politics, and he himself is declaring his support for the new Prime Minister, Alex Didier Fiem. Haiti's foreign ministry is describing Macron's comments as unfriendly and inappropriate. Historically, Haiti was first plundered by French pirates. It then became a French colony in the 18th century, but a slave army fought for independence, which finally came in 1804, and with it, the abolition of slavery there. The French language and customs are still prevalent in Haiti, but Haitian Creole is the main mother tongue. For Vatican Radio, James Blair's reporting.
All of this is taking place in the context of a dire humanitarian crisis in the country. Impoverished and displaced Haitian children are falling victim to gang recruitment in unprecedented numbers. As Phoebe Martel reports, a new UN report has detailed how the number of children in armed gangs has increased by 70% since 2023.
Children now comprise nearly half of all gang members in Haiti, where armed groups control large swaths of the island nation. According to a recent report from UNICEF, the number of minors recruited into warring gangs surged by 70% in the past year alone. Since 2019, when a presidential assassination catalyzed political collapse and a brutal gang war, the Haitian people have been subject to an ever-intensifying humanitarian crisis. Extreme food shortages, civilian casualties, and mass displacement characterize everyday life. Among the 700,000 Haitians displaced by the conflict are an estimated 365,000 minors, many of whom live in makeshift shelters in the capital city, Port-au-Prince. Schools remain closed, and many children are separated from their families. In a country where most live on less than $4 a day, gang recruiters prey on youth as young as 8 years old by promising thousands of dollars in financial incentives. Gunmen threaten physical violence if children refuse to comply. Quote, "Children in Haiti are trapped in a vicious cycle, recruited into the very armed groups that are fueling their desperation," end quote, UNICEF Executive Director Catherine Russell said in a statement. At the same time, sexual assault and gender-based violence are rampant and disproportionately affect young women and girls. A November 25th report from Human Rights Watch detailed how gang members commit horrific acts of sexual violence to instill fear. Cases involving children are up by 1,000% compared to the same period in 2023. I'm Phoebe Martel.
And now moving over to Sudan. On Friday, the first World Food Programme convoy arrived at the Zamzam camp in North Darfur, marking the start of a major operation to deliver emergency food aid to Sudan's most vulnerable regions. Sister Faluna Joseph has more.
On Friday, the first World Food Programme, or WFP convoy, arrived at the Zamzam camp in North Darfur after 3 months of famine, marking the start of a major operation to deliver emergency food aid to Sudan's most vulnerable regions. The WFP convoy, consisting of over 700 trucks carrying 17,500 tons of food, is enough to sustain 1.5 million people for a month. These supplies are en route to communities across Sudan, including 14 high-risk hotspots, according to a recent statement by the WFP. In July 2024, the Zamzam displacement camp was declared to be at Phase 5, the highest level of famine under the Integrated Food Security Phase classification. Thousands of children in the camp are suffering from severe malnutrition, highlighting the urgent need for sustained aid. Dabanga, a Sudanese news agency, reports that the operation had been delayed by intense fighting and impassable roads during the rainy season. Sudanese authorities have extended the use of the Adre border crossing with Chad by 3 months in a significant move to support humanitarian efforts. This crossing serves as a critical and direct route for delivering aid, helping to address the worsening hunger crisis in Sudan. The WFP called for all border crossings to remain open to sustain aid deliveries. The organization currently reaches 2 million people on a monthly basis and aims to expand its reach to over 8 million people by the end of the year. I am Sister Florina Joseph, SCN.
And in a final bit of world news, Cardinal Michael Czerny, prefect of the Vatican's Dicastery for Integral Human Development, has visited Valencia in Spain, which was devastated by recent flooding. Just as he did when he visited Ukraine after the war broke out in 2022, as well as the crisis-stricken areas in parts of the Amazon and areas in Africa, Cardinal Czerny brought Pope Francis' message of closeness and solidarity. Earlier this month, Pope Francis announced that Isaac the Syrian, a saint of the Church of the East, would be officially added to the Roman Martyrology, meaning that he could officially be venerated by Catholics too. The move is being described as a major step forward in relations between the Catholic Church and the Church of the East, which split from the rest of the Christian world in 431. Earlier, I spoke to Professor Sebastian Brock of Oxford University about the Pope's recent decision to honour this desert-dwelling hermit saint of the Church of the East.
Well, I was absolutely delighted. I think it's a wonderful move forward. I hope it will stimulate other people to take notice. I'm particularly interested in what might happen in the Coptic tradition, because the Coptic Orthodox Church has always greatly admired the works of Isaac. But Isaac, of course, comes from the Church of the East, which unfortunately, in at least in Pope Shenouda's view, is unacceptable and has been barred from joining the Middle East Council of Churches, which is really a tragedy. And it's awful that an indigenous church of the venerable character of the Church of the East should be barred from that very important body. But there it is. So whether this will have any effect, I've just no idea.
This is not the first time that Pope Francis has put a saint that was not canonized by the Catholic Church on the Roman Martyrology. He did it most notably with the Coptic martyrs about a year ago. What's, as someone you've dedicated your life to, as well as the Syriac studies, to ecumenical work, I mean, what's your assessment of that strategy that the Pope has applied on all these different circumstances?
No, I think this is wonderful. It's, as it were, the counterpart to something that the Church of the East has done in recent years, must be about 15 years ago or more, and that is to remove all the anathemas on saints of other churches. And I think the Church of the East is the only one that has officially done that, and I think that's a wonderful move. So this is, as it were, the opposite way of proceeding. So I'm all for this way of proceeding ecumenically. And obviously, in some cases, it's going to be quite difficult, but it's a wonderful gesture. And even just one or two saints accepted in that way, I think, would be very good.
That was Professor Sebastian Brock of Oxford University speaking to me earlier about the Pope's recent decision to honour St. Isaac the Syrian from the Church of the East. That brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, please visit our website. Many thanks go to Daniele Giorgi in the studio in the Vatican. I'm Joseph Tullock. Goodbye.